I feel like I'm a winner today. And the reason I feel like a winner is because of the guest I have in studio. We're going to spend some time with this gentleman. Rarely do I have an opportunity to speak with, you know, I don't like the word whistleblower, but it's a word we're using in this piece to give you a better understanding of what this young man has, taken on as a responsibility. Let's not stall anymore. Let's welcome Dr. Alexander Nataros. How are you, Dr. Nataros?
I'm well. I appreciate the opportunity to come into studio and share this piece. I think, as you'll understand, it's part of a much larger piece of patient safety and medical error in the McGill University affiliated hospitals, but in the broader Montreal network as well. And I think it's very important this story gets told because it's part of, well, it affects us all.
Okay. First, I just want to do a little background on you, sir. You come from a medical family?
Yeah, exactly. My grandparents studied, trained at McGill, and received their MDs from McGill in 1953, 1954. My uncle graduated in ophthalmology from McGill in the 80s, and I've got other doctors in my family. All my medical base is rooted in British Columbia, so I've come to Montreal from BC from a different context, and so knowing very well a different medical system, and increasingly over my past 5 years here, being quite shocked by what I've seen.
Okay. Dr. Nataros, right away, being Greek, I know that your name has Greek roots. You do not speak the language, and the Hellenic roots of your name date back to the 1600s?
That's right. Yeah, it's Ukrainian more recently, but there was migration from Greece to the Ukraine. Unfortunately, even there, I'm only about an eighth Ukrainian. So unfortunately, I lack the pride that I so admire in some of my Greek patients here in Montreal.
Well, I want to tell you, you look Ukrainian. The Greek roots will last you forever, buddy. I gotta tell you, with all respect to all cultural communities, I like to think that little extra courage you needed to do what you did came from deep down inside, from a little bit of that Greek roots.
Well, I appreciate it, but for me, it's I guess maybe it's courage, but for me, it's only my responsibility as a medical doctor is that the minute June 5th, 2012, when I received my medical degree from McGill. Part of my own professional and personal ethic and responsibility by the Hippocratic Oath is to when there is an affront or there is a threat to my patient's safety, I need to say something. That's all this is. And unfortunately, what's happened is this has spiraled terribly out of control in the sense that the Faculty of Medicine at McGill has done terrible things to try and, well, hang me. And all I have done is to try and protect my patients.
All right. That's the part. First of all, I want you to know, in all fairness, that we are contacting McGill. And we did contact, we just couldn't get any confirmations from him. Your director,
Sarkis Medarisian.
Yes. Yes, boy, do you know of our heart. Okay. Yes, actually, we did contact the gentleman in question, who has not given anybody any confirmations yet. But yes, Sarkis Meterisyan, Dr. Meterisyan. We have a lot of Armenians who listen to our show. If anybody knows Dr. Sarkis Meterisyan, and I'm sure some of my listeners are now going, yes, we know him. Please tell Dr. Meterisyan that we really strongly recommend he does accord an interview. If he doesn't want to give it to us, he's going to have to make a statement, because we're going to be on this story until there is. Only because I've lived through what you're talking about from the side of a daughter who saw the mistake the doctor on call was making, saw the face of the intern who realized it, and when I spoke with the intern off record, the kid was in borderline tears, but he told me, I can't help you. There's no way am I going to go and tell that.
It's awful, and it's very tragic to see what learners in our McGill system go through as medical students and residents. Because we are trained, we are told to be idealistic, we are told to have empathy, we are told to have physicianship. We are trained in McGill medicine in physicianship. And yet the reality of what we face on the wards, in the hospitals of Montreal, is that the minute we demonstrate anything resembling empathy, we are beat down and suppressed and told, no, 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 you don't do that here. And so, as you might imagine, that is crushing. And so there's medical students and residents, and it's none too few that face pretty severe mental health crises, because, I mean, burnout and depression are not far removed when you just want to do your job and you're not allowed to.
I just want to read something, sir, from a message we received that you put out there. Patient safety in McGill-affiliated hospitals is under threat. I write you today because I am gravely concerned for the safety of patients in the McGill-affiliated hospitals. My professional duty as a medical doctor is to inform you and the public. In the absence of public pressure, nothing will be done, and Montreal patients will continue to suffer and die. An incident is being investigated by the independent ombudsman at St. Mary's Hospital, where senior McGill doctors make significant life-threatening medical errors. As the junior doctor receiving the crashing patient, I acted and recorded as needed to take strong and decisive steps to save this patient's life. The tertiary hospital which received this patient on transfer recognized the corrective actions I took, as well as the senior doctor's significant errors that threatened this patient's life. Now, accepting all that as gospel truth, what I expected as a continuity was a congratulatory letter and a press release to all the media saying, hey, I know our hospitals, you know, we're not perfect, but looky here. Look here, man. We saved patient Jones because one of our young, brilliant interns, right, rushed in, oversaw immediately with the senior doctor because to err is human. To err is human. But that's not what they did.
What I can say is that for me, it's very sad to have to go to the media and discuss this.
Well, I think so.
I've waited 2 months, and I've told the faculty and Dr. Medrese since January 24th repeatedly in written and verbal form that I do not want to do anything that would threaten the good name of McGill, because I hold it in great esteem, because my grandparents and my uncle and other members of my family have gone through and received their medical degrees and certifications from McGill. We are proud of McGill, but we are deeply ashamed of their behavior here. And it's an affront to patients, it's an affront to Montrealers. And what I can say is that, well, if people think that the Arthur Porter scandal was just about Arthur Porter, that's not the case. You have to look deeper.
Oh, yes. It's not just one man. No, one man can't spin and do what happened. And anyway, look, Dr. Alexander Nataro, you're a first-year family medicine resident. It was at St. Mary's Hospital. Am I right?
You're right, but also it's important that we acknowledge St. Mary's is a superb institution. It's a wonderful hospital, and it stands out as an oasis in some of these broader issues within the McGill-affiliate hospitals. It happened at St. Mary's. It was with three of the senior physicians in the McGill system, teachers and physicians in the McGill system, who have run with this and attacked me on such deep and personal levels to try and distract from these issues. And I, again, never had any intention of making this public. The day after the event, I spoke one-on-one to each of these physicians asking just for my own learning, because all I'm trying to do is learn so I can serve my patients better. And all that came of that was 3 weeks later, I received in my evaluation nothing commenting on the specific incident, but character attacks saying Alex is argumentative, Alex is challenging, Alex doesn't respect authority. For me, that speaks to a grave censorship in a system that limits our ability to serve and protect our patients.
Actually, Alex, I got to tell you, all three things you said are necessary characteristics to survive in a system that's not working. I applaud those characteristics. I mean, if they wrote them down as a negative, they blew it again.
Well, that's just it. So I had the privilege last week to go down to Boston for a conference on medical error, patient safety, the Association of Healthcare Journalists. And I spoke with some of the, not specific to this issue, I didn't raise my issue, because again, I'd want to do the minimum amount of, well, public, whatever this is, damage or otherwise, to McGill. It's my clearly stated intention. I want to return to the McGill system and St. Mary's Hospital as soon as possible to serve my patients. But at the same time, this conference, the individuals and the experts, the world experts in medical error, at Brigham and Women's, at some of the Harvard affiliates, some of the leading lawyers in the field, everyone was dead clear that we need to do more to protect whistleblowers, and specifically nurses, and specifically medical students, and specifically medical residents, who are so willing to say something and stand up for something, because we all make mistakes. We all make mistakes. That is a certainty. But we need to be able to be honest with each other and ourselves with our mistakes.
Dr. Nataros, one of the big problems in Canada, and we've been trying to get a law, whereas in the United States they started doing it, registering and keeping on record the medical errors. We don't do it in Canada. You can't even go find out what errors or lawsuits a doctor had. I mean, I couldn't even go find out on the internet, if I punched in your senior's name, I wouldn't see the story. They don't have that kind of centralized information system on our hospital mistakes here.
Well, that's exactly I need to clarify, the senior was not Dr. Sarkis Medaresan.
No, he's the
associate dean of postgraduate education at McGill. This was other physicians who I have not named publicly, but who are part of this investigation by the Office of the Ombudsman at St. Mary's Hospital.
Okay. I was not going to ask you to name the doctor in question, because as I saw in your documentation...
Doctors,
okay, you're not there yet. So I'm going to wait, you know, we'll see what happens.
There's a due process that I'd like to respect. I walked down the path of the quote-unquote due process within McGill, and at every turn, it just, it hung me further, right? And they reinforced their own protective mechanisms and made me look worse and worse and worse, and deflected from the issues of the patient's safety. And so I do have faith, however, I can say, in the professionalism and the independence of the Ombudsman at St. Mary's Hospital. As I say, I have nothing but the highest respect and admiration for St. Mary's Hospital. I feel it is what the future looks like in terms of primary care front and center, and well, caring for our patients.
Dr. Alexander, we're going to go to a quick break. When we come back, I'd like to go over the situation, okay, that you faced that day when you made your decision to step in.
I can give broad strokes. I can't get into details for patient confidentiality.
Okay, thank you.
Mike.
Karina's Club Lounge, located on the third floor of the famous Sir Winston Churchill Pub Complex, invites you to Le Piano Bar. With its stunning and intimate decor, Karina's showcases some of Montreal's best live talent from Wednesday to Saturday. A cozy atmosphere and friendly staff, you're invited to listen and dance along to old and new classics performed by talented vocalists and pianists. Karina's is a fantastic spot to enjoy dinner with friends and a great place to enjoy a cocktail to the sounds of the music. Le Piano Bar at Karina's Club Lounge, 1455 Crescent, 3rd floor, between St. Catherine and de Maisonneuve. For more information, call 514-288-3814 or follow them on Facebook. See you there.
Conan Foods, restaurant distributors of quality products for more than 20 years. Quality protein products like seafood, chicken, beef, pork and pepperoni, cheese, canned goods, spices, condiments, and much more. Conan Foods also offers efficient packaging solutions with paper, board, aluminum, styrofoam, and plastic. All orders are prepared and shipped to clients in less than 24 hours. Call Conan Foods at 514-334-8451. Ask one of our experienced restaurant professionals to help you with food costing, menu planning, and food consultation. Conan Foods. Foods differently. Visit ConanFoods.com.
I'm Filippo Mainella from Electropump CM. We have been in business since 1983, installing equipment that can significantly lower your annual energy costs. Whether the issue is heating or cooling, Electropump CM can also refit your current system to perform like new. Call us today at 450-314-1190. That's 450-314-1190 to arrange for a free estimate. Electropump CM, give us a call.
Montreal. Ladies and gentlemen, we are speaking with Dr. Alexander Nataros. He is in studio. It has to do with patient safety in McGill and affiliated hospitals. Is it under threat? And Look, first let's just start slowly, because I told you we're going to try and get comments and invite all the other side, if you want to do that division. But Dr. Nataros, what happened? Explain that day before anything. How did it start the day? You were on rounds with other interns?
So again, recognizing the confidentiality for due to the patient, as well as the ongoing process by the Office of the Ombudsman at St. Mary's, I will provide broad details that will help the listeners better understand the context. So I was working in cardiology, CCU, at St. Mary's Hospital through the day, covering our consults, covering various patients on the ward. At 5 p.m., I took off the hat as a cardiology intern, a resident, which was my role that month, and put on my hat as the resident who was on call for internal medicine at St. Mary's Hospital. And so what that means is it's a wonderful privilege in that you get a lot of responsibility as a first-year resident. And this is something that people and doctors outside of the St. Mary's system won't quite understand. But we get a lot of responsibility in terms of covering floors and otherwise. So it's a great learning opportunity. It also means you get a lot more responsibility than a lot of first-year residents may elsewhere in Canada and the States. So you have a staff who's on home call, so you can call the staff at home if there's an issue or otherwise. So I came on at 5 p.m. I went to the unit agent and asked for any consults in medicine that had built up over the day. I was given a stack of six, seven medicine consults, nothing particularly acute, things like congestive heart failure and otherwise, things that are stable. The patient's not going to die right now, but you do need to address. So I set to work in addressing those. The eMERGE doctor at St. Mary's flagged for me about 15 minutes in, 5:15 that night. This was in November. Asked me to go and look at a scan of a patient. This was a scan that had been ordered by the outgoing internal medicine staff doctor. At the record showed 4:45. And it was unclear from the written record and otherwise why it had been ordered, although there was a comment that the patient was doing worse, there was a fever and otherwise. So again, this was a patient I had never assessed. I was afloat, if you will, covering the service. And so in any case, I had the opportunity last year as a medical student to do 10 weeks of neurosurgery. So it was a field of real interest for me. In the end, I pursued primary care because my interest is in the public health and addressing some of the real deficits we have in Montreal in the public health care system. And this is, well, first and foremost among them. All to say, I have some understanding that might be a little bit greater than most first-year residents in neurosurgery, or at least reading a scan. And in any case, all to say, this was a very, very, very sick patient, far sicker than St. Mary's had the capacity to deal with. It was a patient that needed transfer to the Montreal Neurologic Hospital. And in any case, what had happened over the preceding 3 days, this patient had come in, been brought in by Urgence Santé. As these things often go, there were the comments from Urgence Santé. There were two different symptoms. Well, the first medical assessment focused on one of them and, well, ignored the other. And really the most basic physical exam finding was missed to an extent where it makes you wonder if anyone actually looked at the patient. And so the point is that first assessment defined the subsequent assessments by the cardiology and the internal medicine services that had done consults and followed it through from there. And the point is a major diagnosis was missed. And the secondary diagnosis was gone ahead with, but the tragedy there is that the secondary diagnosis, the treatment for that, made the misdiagnosis infinitely worse.
Oh, God.
And actually led to, again, a patient who, talking with colleagues and other physicians in the St. Mary's system and otherwise, many have said this probably was the sickest patient St. Mary's will see that year, if not far beyond. So we had no choice. We managed the patient. We protected the airway. We transferred this patient to the tertiary center. Significant interventions were done, and I followed this up just for my own learning and interest in the following days, and this patient survived, but this patient was crashing, and it is not a far stretch to say this patient would have died very quickly. And what I can also say is, after seeing the scan, I read the chart and followed through, and then went and saw the family. And I was very delicate because I realized very quickly the medical legal potential implications. And I'm not interested in that. That's not my world. I'm not interested in creating a American style healthcare of lawsuits and otherwise. But I do want to provide the best care for life. And the family said to me, well, doctor, you're the first doctor we've seen in 2 days. This is in the emergency. This is a patient in stretcher care. That's inappropriate.
Okay, wait a minute. Here's my question now. What are they reproaching you? What are you being reproached then? You just did a, from what we heard, Panayota, don't you feel like applauding him?
Oh, yeah.
So what's the problem, doctor?
The problem, as I said, is that there was nothing made of this. I asked the attendings the next day just for my own learning and to let them know that their patient had been transferred to this tertiary center. So for me, it was part of the continuity and ensuring that they were abreast of what was going on so they could follow up the patient as an outpatient, hopefully when the patient recovered. Again, all I can say is 3 weeks later, I didn't hear anything of it, but I saw in a written evaluation that showed up in my inbox that I was argumentative, that I didn't respect authority, and that I was confrontational. And all I can say is, again, in this context, to attack my own personal character and my own moral character is atrocious, because that is an affront to our patients' safety and lives.
First of all, I got to tell you, when we're training interns, when I tell you something and you question it and you want to run it by me again and you want to, you know, just bang it out to understand better and get it from all sides, I encourage that. Someone else, though, if I wanted to use it against someone, I would call it, he's arguing, he's stubborn, he doesn't listen. No, he asks a lot of questions and he's confident. That's how you're coming off to me right now.
That's something that, unfortunately, our McGill system misses readily in its evaluations and otherwise. There's confusion between confidence and arrogance. And unfortunately,
it's a fine line, you have to admit.
It's a very fine line, and we have to be our own worst critics. And in medicine, more than just about anywhere I've seen, you have to be painfully honest, of course with others, but most of all with yourself. If you do not know your limitations, then you're going to harm patients.
So let me understand this without having details. Two things could have happened, the way I understood it. You do not intervene because you don't want to get involved in the bitter squabbles of the seniors. How dare you made a decision that was my patient, right? Am I pretty close?
Exactly.
Okay. Good to know. And there's a family now whose loved one is still alive. Am I right?
Yeah. As far as I know, I've not been in contact with
them. And they're giving you a hard time and they're putting you out to dry, kid. I'm sorry, I called you kid. You're such a handsome young man. I shouldn't call you kid because you have more wisdom and courage than many people I met. I'm going to tell you why I wish you were there or someone like you. I took my father, must have been 10 years now, 11 years ago. The Royal Vic Cardiology told me that next time he has problems with the lungs, because he was COPD, not to bring him there, to take him to the chest hospital. And they gave me a letter that explained that this man, right, whatever, took him to the chest hospital. Doctor on charge tells the intern, stop all medication. My father was on Coumadin. Long story short, they did it. My father had a stroke. I took my father in hospital. He did not have a stroke when I took him in. They created, they induced a stroke on this fabulous man. And when I spoke with the intern, this kid was afraid to talk to me.
Yeah. As I can say, I'm very sorry that happened and you experienced that. I can't comment on the clinical
particularities. No, I understand. But when somebody's on medication, how do you make a choice like that as you're running through the ward telling your intern, stop all medication so we can see what, you know?
All I can say is that, as you experienced, we have legions of whistleblowers. They're called nurses. They're called med students. They're called medical residents, junior doctors.
Why don't you all get together and demand?
Well, we are willing to, but we are deeply afraid. And as you can appreciate, the way the faculty has treated me has made people terrified. And
you think,
means that means that people that are working today in emerges in Montreal and otherwise, colleagues, friends, friends who are in nursing, who are in medical school, who are in residency, are terrified to say anything to protect their patient if they see something wrong because they've seen how the faculty has left me to hang.
Look, we need more people like you in every industry. What we can do as media, which is really our role, being a very credible broadcast group, our listeners know. When we spend time on something, it's not just to fill airtime. When I saw your story, Dr. Notarios, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, you must be kidding me. There are still people in every industry whose ego is so big that the actual patient or client, or depending on what the industry is, does not matter more than your ego. How dare you served him well? I had other plans for that person. But aren't we here to just serve people well?
There's no room for ego in medicine. There's no room. The minute ego enters the equation, patients die. And all I can say is that my grandparents, who I'm very lucky to have alive today and who are fierce in their support of me here as McGill Medicine graduates, 60th anniversary last year, coinciding with my own graduation from McGill Medicine. They worked for the UBC Faculty of Medicine for a dollar a year as doctors and as teachers. Their commitments, my grandma was a pediatric dermatologist. She started pediatric dermatology at BC Children's. My grandfather started neuro-ophthalmology at UBC. My grandma, they were committed to a dollar a year because they felt, and they were very idealistic, that ours is the greatest privilege as physicians. It is to serve the public and to help people. And I can't speculate too much, but I've lived in Montreal 5 years and I love Montreal. And I hope I have the ability and privilege to return to serving my patients here in Montreal well into the future. But what I can say is that the sense I've gotten in terms of watching, sure, the Charbonneau Commission, sure, Arthur Porter and all these things, is that on many levels, there's a certain sense of entitlement among the privileged classes in Montreal. And the people in medicine, senior doctors, are not removed from that. And the minute you feel entitled as a physician, you stop serving your patients. It is the greatest privilege in the world to be a medical doctor, and these physicians need to realize that.
I'm going to tell you, I went to a heart doctor not too long ago. The guy never looked at me, never smiled, barely answered my questions, and I got a call from his nurse saying I had an appointment in March. Why didn't I go back? And she was a lovely one. I said, you got to be kidding me, Ann. I mean, I know you love this guy. You've been working for him for years, but you got to put yourself in our place. You walk in and you're intimidated. He's supposed to be a healer. He's supposed to make me calm, right? He's supposed to there is a culture in every industry. When that culture, though, sets the ugly roots or plants its ugly roots in the medical system, we're all in trouble.
I also hope to say, I mean, I'm in primary care. I'm pursuing a career as a family doctor. In Montreal, as you know, numbers range from, well, maybe 1 in 2 people do not have access to a family doctor. Again, these are not separate stories in the sense that there is such a disregard and disrespect for primary care doctors, family doctors in Montreal that, again, from my experience working in other provinces, the family doctor and worldwide, the World Health Organization widely recognizes this, the most cost-effective and the best way to ensure health in a population and for individuals is to ensure they have a good primary care provider, be it a nurse practitioner, be it a family doctor.
Hear, hear.
And yet, in Montreal, we have a setup where many people see many specialists, don't have anyone to coordinate their care. You've got a lot of talking heads.
Yeah.
Medicine, at its core, if we're being honest, is not that complicated, but we have to be honest with ourselves and we have to have a systematic approach.
Okay, can't we make you in charge?
No.
How do we put you in charge? Alexander.
No, all I want to do is return to serving my patients at St. Mary's, and that's all I'm asking for here. And I think it's incredibly unfair, and my patients have heard about this story, and they've come out and vocalized online and otherwise in response to articles, and I am very grateful for that. But all I can say is that I guess the proof is in the pudding in that I'm not making my commitment to patient care or anything up. I live my principles. And so I would ask that the McGill faculty lives its principles and that they're transparent and 100% honest. I am not concealing or hiding anything. I've got a file here, and other than patient confidentiality, I will show you everything. So I just ask the faculty do the same.
Okay, well, I got to tell you, you saved a life. I don't think you'll ever go back to a normal life of just working at St. Mary's for the simple reason that you have now become the voice of the proletariat, son. I'm sorry to break the news to you. But, you know, soon we're going to embroider a cape and you're going to have to wear your cape, too. I haven't seen anybody brave enough to stand against the flow of one of the most powerful industries, which is hospitals and the medical world.
Well, what I could say, the Gazette published an article, it posted last night at 10 p.m. about, I think, a number of nurses, trauma nurses, that were laid off.
I did a story on it today.
Well, exactly. So these things are not removed, right? A number of colleagues and friends who are these nurses have been for months feeling pressure and heat and otherwise. This is not fair that nurses are suffering and reaping the consequences of this, because nurses are the front line. If you do anything to threaten nurses or harm nurses or fire or get rid of nurses, it's only patients that will suffer. And so our interests are linked, and our goals to serve patients are the same.
I want to tell you something. Some of your letters of character, and I'm sharing this with the audience because, you know, okay, we're hearing his side of the story, but important to know that authors of the character references portray Dr. Nataros as a doctor who cares deeply for his patients. They cite Dr. Nataros' commitment to social advocacy, including previous work he carried out with institutions such as the Red Cross, and his position as Oxfam Canada's National Youth Director. One of the references mentions that Nataros is only willing to challenge authority when his patients are threatened. Come on, buddy. We all dream of having somebody like that in our corner. We all dream, every single listener now, who's being treated, who goes for chemo, who's afraid or waiting for results, who's caring for a loved one, God forbid it's a child. We wish we had someone like you, Doc. We wish, man, somebody who's going to defy the system to save my life.
Well, the sadness for me, and I've been very lucky to have friends who are medical students and otherwise weigh in and support and otherwise quietly, because again, you can appreciate this is terrifying for a lot of people, and they won't let their names or voices be heard directly, but they're more than willing to share their stories, is that for me, I do this, I do this for my patient, but I also do this because I realize it is my responsibility as a medical doctor. As a medical student, I faced many of the same things here, not as bad in terms of clinical issues, because this is a very stark example. But at the same time, I suffered myself. It was terribly difficult through my Med 3 and Med 4 years working as someone that just wanted to help patients, and I had no power. And had I said anything, I would have been kicked out, and I would not have received my medical degree, and I would have not been allowed to be here today. And I can draw on examples of colleagues who were either kicked out or who were forced to repeat a year for doing nothing more than just trying to stand up for their patients. And what I can say is that if we want to know why our medical system is not working very well or why doctors are not very committed, look to that, because it's a system that eats its young.
I got to tell you, there's definitely a culture, and this culture, it says here, discourages medical students and residents from questioning or disagreeing with the decisions of their supervisors if ever there was a field that should encourage it, because it's life or death. You would think they would say to the interns, listen, anything, if you think I'm wrong or you might be creative and you have a better way of doing it, please speak up.
Exactly. And I think one of the things, there's something, an old philosophical notion, I mean, in the Greek tradition, called doxastic commitment. And it's, I think, important to bring this back because the idea is, well, skin in the game. The idea is that unless if you're willing to put your neck on the line to some extent or to really take personal sacrifices for what you believe in, you have no credibility. And so what I'm saying is a lot of these people that are bringing all these charges against me, let's see their skin in the game. Let's see them stand up, because their charges will not hold anything.
I got to tell you something, Doc. Everybody's going to be judged now by the public. I'm telling you, this, you can't stop it now. It's in the papers. It's in on radio. You know, there's over 100,000 people that are listening to you right now. It's not going to go away, buddy.
Well, what I can say again is that it was never my intention to have to go public. But last Wednesday at the final meeting with Dr. Sarkis Medrasian, the faculty, in essence, declared war against me. And so I had no choice because I knew that once this got out, the public would recognize these issues. And this is a tremendous opportunity. This is a tremendous opportunity for us to have a healthy and open discussion on patient care, on patient safety, on medical errors, and on intimidation in our medical systems, because at the end of the day, they will be stronger and patients will live and survive. Well, there won't be the same level of errors because we will be confident enough to say something.
I'm going to tell you a very good a friend who helped me in caregiving called Cecilia. Her life was cut short. I saw this woman walk into the hospital, strong, no problem, no pain. Her doctor, though, said they found a tumor of ovarian cancer. Sure. They operated on her 3 times. The first 2 times they made mistakes. 1 time they forgot something in her. It caused her kidney failure. She had to run back. They opened her up again, sent her home. Anyway, I'm going to cry if I get into it too much because I literally saw this person die before my eyes because of errors, because of doctors that wouldn't talk to the husband or to her daughter. They were afraid to question the doctors because you know the fear we have. If you think you're afraid to question their authority, picture us, buddy. When we're on their table. Whoa.
Well, exactly. And that's, so it's no accident that I think it was a pulmonologist in the McGill system last year that was found to be videotaping his patients getting undressed. There was an anesthesiologist that's under allegations in Toronto sexually assaulting his patients who were on the table. So all of these things, again, these are, well, the logical extension of when you take people and a huge power differential and a huge inequality where at the end of the day, well, yeah, it's just a numbers game. There will be these bad individuals that do terrible things. And my point is just no, 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 no. This is about the patient.
Did you ever get to speak to the doctor whose patient you had transferred in order to save their lives? Did you ever have a tete-a-tete with him?
I did the next day. So I spoke with these 3 senior physicians.
And they asked you, why did you do this, I assume?
No, they said, well, why are you coming to me with this? Why are you, you sound as if you're challenging my management. And I said very clearly, that's not my goal. I just want to know why this happened and how we can prevent this in the future. I'm only here as a learner. I want, above all else, to be able to tell my own patients in the Family Medicine Center at St. Mary's that, yes, we have an excellent eMERGE, and if something happens, I have confidence that you will be served well. After an episode like that, I can't say that honestly. And for me, that's very sad.
How can we, how are things going to move ahead now? Because you know I'm inviting you back, dude. You can't just put this out now and leave my listeners hanging. So we're doing updates here. So this is part one. Tell me, we're going to, you know, as soon as you leave here, my research team is going to start scratching to find the names of the doctors. And in all probability, we're going to find them. It's up to us after how we want to proceed. Obviously, we've put out again, I want to make this clear, we've put out invitations. My assistant called twice yesterday to the Armenian doctor who is in charge of Dr. Sarkis Medrasian. Dr. Sarkis Medrasian, you're going to have to make a call, buddy. This is a great opportunity for you to turn the medical world around and start repairing it. So, Dr. Medrasian, you know, Armenians have never shied away from a good fight. You fought your genocide just like Greeks fought for their liberty. And Dr. Sarki, I hope you have the cojones, sir. I'm sure you do. Armenian men are very much. To just jump on board this. And ask media to join you, and let's bring some changes to our medical system. Everything happens for a reason. I think God chose this young man to be the catalyst. Let's look at things and what meaning they may have. you know, don't be blinded because you're upset that somebody caused a little riff in your calm lake waters that you're so used to. But you know what, buddy? You're in medicine. If you wanted calm lake waters, you should have done accounting. I'm sorry, doc. No, mais c'est vrai. I mean, if you just wanted a calm industry where things don't really change, medicine? Come on. So, Dr. Natario, you know, unless I find out something completely different that, you know, I mean, you've had excessive use of LSD and you dreamt all this. I want to thank you so much, buddy, for standing up. I don't meet many people with that kind of courage today. Everybody's afraid to lose their little bit of money, their titles, their job. You know what? They've created a culture of intimidation for the proletariat, man. Everywhere we go. Medical, financial institutions, education. Hey, tout partout, ce qu'on va, on se fait claquer, le peuple. Vous parlez français, docteur?
Oui. La plupart de mes patients sont francophones.
Right. Non, écoute...
Mais c'est pour ça que je veux dire... Que pour moi, comme je viens de Colombie-Britannique, ça fait 5 ans que je suis ici. Pour moi, c'était un grand travail d'apprendre le français, d'être capable de m'exprimer en écriture et verbalement. Puis c'est vraiment mon intention de rester ici, de travailler comme médecin ici et de servir mes patients. Mais si McGill ne me donne pas la chance, j'ai aucun choix.
Non, nous autres, on a le choix. Tu vois, c'est ça qui est le fun. Au Québec, on est bizarre, OK? On est spécial. And the multicultural communities aussi, on a développé d'une différente façon de les autres provinces parce qu'on a l'élément francophone. So, we do like to think of ourselves as being special in Quebec. The only problem I'm having right now is if Dr. Sarkis Metrician and the whole McGill system of medicine does not embrace this opportunity to turn things around, they are doing an injustice to us. They're just going to make matters worse. Because, honey, if they succeed in tearing you down, what do you think new interns are going to do? They're even going to lie to protect them on mistakes. No. Hey, come on. Not on my shift. I guess that's how you felt, not on your shift, right? Anyway, look, the senior doctors have to turn it around. And by the way, I just want to put out there that is there a law that teaches you doctors are not allowed to smile? Non, je suis curieuse. Est-ce qu'ils vous enseignent ça à l'école?
No. But what I can say is, as you might appreciate, when we're facing this intimidation, as I said, it is traumatic. And so it's no wonder we have the rates of burnout and depression among medical trainees.
And you make more
doctors.
And more mistakes that way.
Well, of course. And then we're just running scared the whole time. And so we're so afraid of making a mistake that we will do anything to cover it up or to beat down or suppress anyone that tries to identify it purely for the sake of learning.
Oh, Dr. Nataros, I think we're going to be dancing on this one a long time. I hope and I envision you in charge of turning the whole thing around. I think you are a talented young man who has the courage, the ability, the knowledge, and the intellect. We've been waiting for someone like you for a long time. I want to apologize on behalf of the medical system in Quebec because I would have really have thought that they would have jumped on board the opportunity to work with you and turn things around.
I think there's a new dean at the Faculty of Medicine at McGill, Dean Eidelman, and he, from my experience, is an excellent, excellent person. He's committed, first of all, to transparency. He's committed to broader issues of reforming our medical system and our medical training system. There's a new curriculum that McGill's bringing in for its medical students as of next year. The point there is, I don't want to lead anything. I just want to return to serving my patients at St. Mary's. And again, it's very sad to me that this has had to come to this and that my patients for the past 2 months have been deprived of their own family doctor. And so I have faith. He has not proven otherwise in terms of the Dean Eidelman. I have faith in his ability to provide the leadership and the moral courage to do so. So I certainly am not counting out McGill's leadership, but they do, as you said, Ça suffit. They need to do something.
Non, non, il faut tout nettoyer ça pour commencer à nouveau. Puis je pense, où c'est le plus important, c'est la mentalité qui vous enseigne. La mentalité de peur. Never argue with authority. Questionne jamais le Seigneur, t'auras jamais un job. Hey, whoa. While I'm dying in the next room, by the way. I don't think so. So I could talk to you forever. Let's talk about what's coming up now. What's your calendar? What are you waiting on? When is there an answer? Where should we sign the petition? Where would you like us to show up with placards?
I appreciate that. For me, as you can appreciate in all of this, much like in medicine, self-care comes first. So the most important thing for me is to look after myself through this, because as you can imagine, this could consume one's life very quickly.
No.
So my point is just that this is just another
don't
piece
you
of...
give up on us now, no, Alexander.
No, but my point there is just this is a piece of business that's compartmentalized. So they've put me on forced leave of absence. So that gives me my clinical time that I can devote to this piece.
Wait a minute, you're not practicing anymore?
No, I'm on forced leave of absence.
You mean a patient now does not have the luxury of your services?
Since January 24th, the faculty has put me on forced leave of absence. So my obstetrics patients, who I had committed to delivering, I cannot do anything. I am barred. The faculty on Wednesday told me, you are not allowed in St. Mary's Hospital except for the eMERGE, right? So you can realize the pathology at work. And the rhetoric and...
Well, you got to hang in there, dude. It's going to be tough.
But no, my point is that the tough part was the 2 months when I was working with the faculty to give them the benefit of the process. As this goes public, I've had incredible support. And so I have no doubt in the support and the protection as a whistleblower that this provides in terms of the public. It's as a silent whistleblower, if you will, in trying to give the process the benefit of the doubt. That was exhausting, and that for me was difficult. But again, all I can say is that nothing compares to my experience and the experience of others as learners in a system. For me, as a medical student, where I could do nothing, that was suffering. This part, well, here I'm just advocating for my patients, and so for that, that's why I went to medical school. And so steps ahead, well, I just encourage everyone to use this as an opportunity to have discussions around patient safety, around medical error, around intimidation, because this is our chance. And so the faculty will do everything they can, as they've made clear, to make this about a problem resident, Alex Nadaris. It is not. It is about much bigger issues. So I hope that we can take this opportunity to discuss those big issues.
Are we waiting on a decision from Dr. Matarisyan? What's the situation there? What are we waiting on now?
So as part of what I said in terms of the faculty declaring war last Wednesday in a meeting with Dr. Matarisyan, every step along the way it's been completely opaque. There's been no clarity and nothing coming from the faculty. But last Wednesday, in our second meeting, February 28th, I'd asked Dr. Matarisyan because it became clear to me the faculty was not acting to clear my name and in fact was reinforcing a lot of these things. So I asked for an independent process through the Collège des Médecins du Québec. So he agreed to that. He went about his due diligence in terms of organizing that. Last Wednesday, well, something shifted that I still don't quite understand, but all to say that he said, we forwarded our documents to the college. They will be reviewing them on Friday, this past Friday, March 22nd, and then we'll be deciding where to go and what to do from there. And so for me, that was, that's not what we agreed. We agreed I would have my fair day in court and I could share my own documents and otherwise. And so, again, for me, that's where I realized, I have no choice but to go public here because the faculty is willing to crucify me. And I have no doubt the college will be greatly influenced by this document package that the faculty submits. And so, again, I hope, again, in the sake of transparency and openness, the college will see these stories and otherwise and engage in this debate and recognize that all I'm trying to do is to serve my patients. And I just want to get back to work.
It's mind-boggling, Doc. I mean, it's affecting me. I can imagine how it's affecting you. I don't know if I should cry or scream. Non, mais tu sais.
Well, that's it. So, I mean, fear and anxiety and worry, these things don't motivate. So we need to stay motivated because there are real issues. There are patients suffering and dying every day for issues related to this in Montreal. And again, Sasuthi, we have to do something.
You know what? Everything happens for a reason. Meeting you was very serendipity. My whole life works on serendipity. Again, there was a reason. And if I can do anything to help turn around the medical system, actually, if I can be responsible, even indirectly, for 0.003 of empathy in each doctor that's a senior, because you young guys start with that. You know, most of you are there really genuinely interested in saving lives. And then you get involved and you realize what it's all about. And you're like, wait a minute, not everybody is here because they want to save lives. Some are there for the fat money. Others are there because it's prestigious. Others are there because it's an inn in case I need hospitals for my family. Others are there because the parents push them. No, no, seriously, hello? You're supposed to become a doctor for the reasons you gave.
All I can say is that I draw my inspiration from my McGill medicine-trained grandparents who worked for $1 a year for the UBC Faculty of Medicine. My grandma is a pediatric dermatologist who founded that department at BC Children's. For her, she opens a newspaper now and looks at dermatologists who are advertising and doing various cosmetic work that she trained. And she trained when she was working for $1 a year. And for her, that's very difficult to take because she sees a generation of entitled doctors that have forgotten their privilege of serving your patients.
Yeah, the people,
and there is no greater privilege. And we can draw our inspiration from Dr. William Osler, who McGill stakes its reputation on. We have the Osler Library at McGill. This is what Dr. Osler stood for, is serving our patients and justice.
Boy, did that turn around too, eh? That whole hypocritical thing, eh? That whole, I mean, it's gone out the window. When they do repeat it, when they graduate, do they retain some of the words? No. That's what I thought. Okay. Well, you know, it's a bit like my dad, when he was bringing us up, used to say, taught us about honor and integrity and all that. Post-war, right, people who fought in world wars, a lot of fantastic beliefs. And one of the things he used to tell us about honor, anyway, you can't buy it and you can't sell it, and anything you choose to do in life has to be honorable. You should, you know, but that's not what's happening today, and you are going to cause a lot of waves, buddy. You are going to cause a lot of waves.
I hope as much as you can realize this is not about me. And
It's about us, people.
Exactly. But also I mean that as this story comes out and as it becomes clear that I have a certain degree of protection, I have no doubt there will be many people that will come out.
Will start coming out.
But they need that protection because, as you can appreciate, this climate of fear is what sustains the dysfunction and the threat to patient safety.
Okay. Well, let me put it out there right now. This radio station has been a forum for differing opinions, and we've solved quite a few things with our listeners live on the station. Let me put out there that if anybody's listening who does want to come on, if you don't want your voice recognized, we can work around that. If you would like to add to this story, if you would like to share some of the stories, if you want to send me something in confidential, you have my word of honor. And again, my dad used to say, don't throw away, I give you my word of honor so easily. He used to tell us, keeping a word of honor is a full-time job. But we don't teach our kids that anymore, right? So anyway, but I want to tell you, we're gonna be following this story. I do not like what I heard and what they're trying to do to you, young man. This is not what it's all about. And just the thrill of bringing back what a doctor really should stand for, his love of life and his patients, smiling, empathy, encouraging us, telling us, hey, we're here for you. What happened to those days? I only see that in movies, and even then, they have trouble writing those scripts because they don't believe them, the writers. All right, well, you know, you're throwing everything off, you know that, eh? You're bringing everything full circle, son. It's a good thing. I wish you the best. I'm obviously going to ask you to come back. I would like you to promise to give us updates. Can we have that?
Of course, of course.
You'll give us updates?
Yeah. But again, as I can say, the process from the faculty is completely opaque. So all I can say is that, well, I know as much as you do now, and so this is why I ask for your help as well in terms of, well, maybe trying to encourage the faculty to be a bit more transparent.
No, we're going to be calling the faculty. We're going to be calling the College of Physicians. That's what my researchers are going to be doing next. And I'm going to invite them on the show. And I want them to tell me, because I lived it with my parents, that no, we are wrong. Our medical system has not gone in the toilet. And our doctors are training caring young interns and encouraging them to challenge them. I got a young lady here. It's a quick story. Everybody here tells me, you know, I run my team, okay? Oh, my God, Mrs. G, and be careful, and don't argue, and don't speak, and don't... Got a young girl here, and hired her not too long ago. She's from Brazil. Comes into my office once. We had made a decision about a marketing plan. She just wasn't comfortable with it. She saw a flaw, and she really believed her idea was better. When you just start with me, I mean, what do you think is like, yeah, I'm not going to go in there and tell the woman's been in broadcasting 40 years. I'm going to go tell her. She's won these awards, right? She came in. Eyes downcast. She goes, you know, if I can just say I have this idea, if I can just say it. Gave me the idea. For a flash of a second, I got to be honest, I was pissed off. Why? Ego. Why didn't I think of that? It was a flash, though. My smile came on. I was so proud of her. A, for being so creative, and B, for caring about my client so much that she risked my wrath to come and tell me, I think my idea is better, boss.
That's,
by the way, we went with her idea.
That's exactly it. I mean, that's a great teacher, is someone who... sure, in that split-second moment, feels a bit threatened, but then recognizes that
exactly. That
is ego, labels it, and puts it aside and says, actually, this is a great opportunity. And we have these opportunities hundreds, thousands of times a day in our clinical work and as we work as learners, but also as teachers. So all I can say is that my understanding, and I've had the privilege of having some pretty inspiring teachers growing up in British Columbia, in purely in the public healthcare, public education system. But for me, what I can say is that they've told me, and I hope to share the same, is that, well, a great teacher inspires their learners to further greatness and inspires their learners to do things far greater than they could ever do.
Well, that's what
and
I was going to say.
So for me, well, if at some level this could motivate or maybe even inspire medical students and nurses and medical residents.
And teachers. Maybe there's a teaching doctor listening to you going, you know what, I'd never admit it out loud, but the kid's right. Huh? That's the first effect I want to create. That's the first baby step for them to look at it and in their own private world say, shit, you know what, he's right.
Well, I mean, last week I was at Massachusetts General Hospital and a family friend who's one of the leading cardiologists in the world in cardiac imaging, as well as a couple other, we just had lunch in the cafeteria. And Mass General is MGH, not Montreal General, Mass General is considered man's greatest hospital in some circles. That's where the first ether anesthetic was used in 1846. It's where the first completely open charts. So there isn't a thing written about a patient that is not the patient's property. You can appreciate how, well, different that is from our context.
Get
here in Montreal.
I can't even get an x-ray out of my file at these hospitals here.
Well, exactly. And that is an affront to your own patient.
It's my information.
It's your information.
It's my life.
That's exactly it. And so my point is just having these discussions, critical discussions with these leading physicians in the world, they are 110% clear that what I'm doing is the right thing. And what they are doing there is they're light years ahead of where we are at McGill. And so it's very clear where the top institutions in the world are going and have gone. Unfortunately, McGill, we're regressing, and we need to change that.
Oh, no. You know, look, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Dr. Alexander Nataros. This is a young man who got in trouble because he cares about patient safety in McGill-affiliated hospitals. Is our patient safety under threat? Well, I don't want to break your bubble, Doc, but we knew that. We are discouraged by our hospitals. We avoid them. We don't trust them. We don't like them. And it's not the fault of the nurses or the younger generation. And when we do get a young, cocky doctor, we know who to blame it on, the culture. And we realize that that young doctor is only trying to survive. And if he's too friendly with us or too nice, it's not going to work. And that just, it floors me, man. I'm like, we're talking about medicine. We're not talking about engineering or, I don't know. And even then, shouldn't you be nice to your clients?
Patients get it. And so that's the thing is that, again, doctors, well, we have a certain tendency to think, we studied for many years. We are smarter than everyone else. We are entitled to our pay. We are entitled to be the boss. And that's wrong. And so patients recognize this, though. Patients don't miss when someone's arrogant or when someone's egotistical. They just don't really trust them to the same extent. And so it's no accident that people have a certain, fear, but also a lack of trust in the Montreal healthcare and specifically McGill affiliate hospitals. So again, I mean, we can link sure to Dr. Arthur Porter, the now disgraced and under warrant of arrest former CEO of the McGill University Health Center from 2004 to 2011. There was a very telling documentary called Porter's Way, done by CBC The National. It aired about 6-7 weeks ago. That's available online. And this documentary, they interview one of the journalists in Detroit because Dr. Porter ran and then ran into the ground, the Detroit Cancer Center, in a similar way prior to his term here.
Oh, he had a magic touch, didn't he?
Well, exactly. And so this journalist says quite clearly, he was the most charming man I've ever met in medicine. He was great. He was saying this and that. And he was a crook. And how did McGill hire this guy? How did they not look at the most basic element of his curriculum vitae, his resume, to see that he got away with terrible embezzlement in the Detroit system? Not only that, then we hire him. We empower him to do what he did. And of course, I don't want to get into the political issues there, but there is all sorts, including his role as a chairman of the CSIS panel.
I want to tell you that we've already put the question out there. How the hell did you hire this guy? I mean, you don't do background checks. I mean, and again, we gave the small example. When it comes to the proletariat, they're going to run you through Equifax and 13 other places, and 9.9% of the times you're refused. And when it comes to these kind of positions, nobody checks on backgrounds. He was just so pleasant at the meeting. We had a great time at lunch. And you know what? He's going to keep our secrets. I'm telling you, though, I think it is a new rising, a new dawn. I just, things like you and what's happening and the stand you took come my way. And as a journalist and moving on in my life, I'm like, okay, there is hope. Every so often, there's somebody who's going to stand for what they believe in.
Well, some people unsolicited, a patient that emailed me yesterday who'd read about one of these stories said, Dr. Nadaris, some are saying that 2013 is the year of truth. And good on you and keep going. And so, well, maybe it is. So we need to do our job here.
Okay, before we set up our next interview, if somebody would like to comment or reach you, can you give us some coordinates?
There's a Facebook page. You can Google my name. So Alex Nadaris, N-A-T-A-R-O-S. MD, so there's a Facebook page that you can see updates or otherwise, as well as a Twitter account that's at Alex Nadaris MD.
Okay, so Alex A-L-E-X Nadaris N-A-T-A-R-O-S Nataros Alex Nataros MD.
Yeah.
Okay.
As well as the Twitter account.
Okay, on your Facebook, actually give your Twitter account again.
Is at Alex Nadaris, MD.
At Alex Nadaris, MD.
Yeah.
All right. Doc, you better not disappear on us, eh? No, seriously. I'm hanging on to you. You're the anchor now that's going to turn this around. If you felt you weren't ready for it, you're going to have to take that up with God because he's obviously chosen you for this. So, buddy, get ready. Puis en français, on dit attache bien ta tuque. Parce qu'il va y avoir du vent qui va venir. Mais moi, j'ai aucun doute que tous mes auditeurs, ils sont en train de t'applaudir. And you have given us all hope, Alex. Did you realize what you've done? You've given us hope.
Well, that's very kind, but I just want to get back to serving
being a good doctor.
Serving my patients. Yeah, I just, again, for me, the sadness in this is I'm banned from seeing my patients, and I've done nothing wrong. I've done nothing wrong. And so my patients are deprived of their doctor. And for me, that's very sad because, well, it's just sad because these people, we lack family doctors in Montreal. We lack continuity. And so by me being forced onto a leave of absence, these patients lose their continuity. And the faculty, there's been no transparency or justification for what they've done.
I am going to get the names, and I want you to know that as soon as I have the names, I'm going to make them public because there is no embargo on this. I have not been served like media.
Well, I can't condone that. So I can't condone that.
No,
all
no,
I can
no,
say
no,
is that I'm just trying to do, I just want to get back to work, and I think the faculty has mistreated me here. And so I've had no choice. I have never intended to go public, but as you can appreciate, from last Wednesday on, in terms of their actions, I had no choice.
No. You had a choice. I'm glad you made the right choice, and I'm glad you went public. Okay? And don't look back. We're going to move ahead. We're going to make some changes, and we always need a catalyst, and there's always that one person that God sends along, and I'm a firm believer, Alex, that it's you. Dr. Nataros, I'm telling you, you're going to hear a lot from our listeners in this interview. Anybody who wants to make any comments, Alex Nataros, MD, is your Facebook, am I right? .com, correct?
No, you can just Google Alex Nataros, MD.
Okay.
It'll pull it up, or Facebook search, I guess, and then add Alex Nataros, MD for the Twitter. But again, this is a piece that I deal with, and so you'll see some posts, but at the same time, I'm just trying to do my own, my own medical education and otherwise. So on these pages as well, I post things that I think are interesting to my patients and that
question.
Are relevant to their own health.
You are a full-fledged doctor, right?
Yes.
You still
I'm not fully licensed, but I received my medical degree June 5th, 2012.
Okay, what's left for the licensing?
Well, I have to finish my residency.
That's
and then,
how long?
Well, again, I've been on a leave of absence since January, so it delays every day that it delays. So, but it's a 2-year residency.
Okay. Oh, you're right, man. You had what, a year already under your belt?
7 months.
Okay. Oh, no, this is wrong what they've done to you. Big time. Big time wrong, man. Okay. So we're going to get you through that. Yeah, we've adopted you now. We're going to get you through that. You're going to get your license. Then we're going to open a clinic. A clinic that says, we care. We really, really care.
So what I can tell you is that our McGill Medicine class of 2012, we've got a lot of people there that really care. And so
you can hire them.
Well, of course, of course. But this takes people who are committed to helping people, standing together and rooting out the Arthur Porters of the world that are, that make us mistrust each other and make us mistrust the system. But again, this is not any one individual. This is a system that's rotten in some ways to the core.
Big time. I'm going to use your terminology. It's time for the proletariat to perform some surgery. Yes, oh, I couldn't wait to get my hands in there. All right, we're going to take a quick break, Montreal. We've been talking a lot with this young doctor. We're going to let him move on and do what he needs to do. And I got to tell you, if you can't come in studio, we'd like to have an update with you, if possible, sir, next Monday or Tuesday.
Tuesday for sure. Yeah.
Okay, that way I'll have the girl book it with you, because by Tuesday I'll be able to give everyone an update about what happened with the calls we're going to put in to the medical faculty and to the College de Physicians, okay? All right. Well, listen, your Greek roots date to 1600, but your Greek roots brought you back here, son. Thank you, doctor. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity in telling this story.
Mike.